Holly Cotton here, and you guys know I'm all about community. I'm always talking about empowerment, being the change, and what we're doing to basically make the world a better place. So I'm super, super excited to bring you guys today Micah Dennis. If you follow her on social media, her handle is Captain Savahood, and she is an author, a curriculum developer, workshop facilitator, and she's going to tell us about all the great things that she's doing in her community and how she is being the change. So welcome, Micah.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Okay, so let me just go into it first, because you guys know, if you don't know, I usually ask people to send me their bio, and then I like create some talking points, and then it's like a whole lot of work. So I told Mike, I said, hey, send me your bio and a headshot, and we'll go from there. She made my job so easy, because Micah like sent me 30,000 bullet points. She said, these are the things I feel comfortable talking to. I was like, oh my gosh, like, oh, it, she made my job so much easier. So thank you, Micah, for that.
Hey, no problem. No problem. Okay. You got to write your own narrative.
Yeah, I know. Hey, because sometimes people, you want to talk about particular things, you know, and like for me too, because I do so many things. I'll always say, this is about my new book, or this is about such and such. Like, don't try to talk about other things.
Exactly.
Right.
Don't put you in a position you don't want to be in.
This is not about who I'm dating or whatever. This is about
exactly.
You already know. Okay. So first of all, let's talk about, because I know there's a lot of people, especially this week is called National Volunteer Week or something is this week.
Yeah.
I think it's National Volunteer Week, because I'm volunteering for like 18 things this week. So whenever people are thinking about volunteer work, they're thinking about giving back community, this is a great time to highlight things like your nonprofit. So can you, I guess, go into and actually tell us what it is, what is the actual story and the background?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I want to say thank you for everything that you do, especially with the community, making sure you're going and working and getting the story from real people. That was something I really love about what you do is you're connected with the grassroots people that are really doing the work. So I'm very thankful to be on your platform. So with this week being National Volunteer Week, I know it's big for a lot of organizations, especially because of that grassroots aspect, meaning that we're starting from the bottom, not just the dirt, but below the dirt, right? We're beneath the mud right now, trying to make it and trying to create a program or a more positive light for our community. So I started my organization back in 2016 while I was still in college at the University of Arkansas. I created an organization called the Village Easing Childhood Poverty. We ran programs such as Fayette Village and In the Field, which are basically case management programs, or more so like a wraparound system for kids in the school to prison pipeline. So that's when we were introduced to the schools, the juvenile detention centers, and the behavioral health facilities being the top three institutions that are affecting these kids' lives holistically, right? And so once we saw that that's what it was, we started to go to all PO meetings and court dates. I started to testify for my adult charge kids when it came to schooling. We do their academic assistance. So I do truancy cardio. If they're missing class, I class check. So we do a whole truancy intervention program, as well as make sure they're on track as far as post and pre-graduation. And then when it comes to mental health, it was more so of a thing that it's connected to us. It's not something that is separate from us, right? And it was something big on understanding the difference between mental health and mental illness, right? And so some kids may have a mental illness that isn't treated through positive behavioral interventions or having a mentor or just having overall well-being, right? There's actually a chemical imbalance. And I think so being able to differentiate the two was very important for our organization, was to, is it a basic need or is it a real mental health need, right? And so what we did with those kids was basically create a safe space, right? We do all trauma-informed care, taking care of their overall well-being as well as the parents, and then it bleeding into the staff of those facilities once we were serving the child. So we came from the bottom up, and then once we started in the field, we started coming from the top down. And so it was almost like now we're serving the institution opposed to the child. even though we know how to serve the child. So now it's making it to where we're becoming completely vertically integrated. So yeah, it was just going to the hood, meeting some kids. As soon as I met them, they thought I was the police, so they ran from me because I had a clipboard, right? So, you know, kids see a clipboard, they like, no, you're an authority figure. So they like, what you doing down here? If you ain't the church, I ain't seen no church bus. I don't know who you are. So I got with them. Once they ran from me, another kid took me over to them. And that was our first meeting. And I still work with those kids today, 8 years later. And those are also the kids in the comic book. So the same kids that I work with day to day are the same kids that we tell stories about in our curriculum, because now that gives them a platform to share their story and to tell their truth. A lot of my kids, the first time that they ever had their story told was in a police report, right? Or in an incident report. It's not necessarily their side of the story to understand where that kid is coming from. So, you know, that was more so the passion behind it, was just being able to do what they needed. They told us what they needed. So I think it's very important for volunteers to get involved, because if it's not a volunteer, it's probably one or two people doing all this work by themselves. So I appreciate you doing that for all those 18 different organizations that, you know.
I know. And hey, listen, and everyone, like, I think people have to also realize too, because I think people, when they hear the word volunteer, they don't really know how to define what a volunteer is, right? So a volunteer is not always doing a specific job that organization needs you. Sometimes volunteering is, what do you do well that can also benefit them? So for me, I know, like, I have a following on social media. I know that I can raise awareness for your cause. I can put a show out. I can do a segment. Mm-hmm. It may not be me physically going out and making sandbags or whatever. Sometimes it's just the person that's not the news. Because a lot of people, especially the younger generation, they don't even watch the news.
No
one watches the news. So they're looking at those news outlets or the pop culture Instagram pages, and they're like, oh Lord, look who died today, or we got a war going on. They wouldn't even know about it. So sometimes that volunteer is also just doing that sort of thing. Now let me ask you this, Micah, because this is such a unique sort of passion that you have, because people do want to help. People do want to give back. They do want to be the difference. All of those things. It's great. There's lots of people that have hearts. But what you're doing is something that's really unique, along with all of the other parts that go with it, because not a lot of people are down there, like you said, in the gutter, fighting on the streets, doing all of that. Yeah. They're in the office typing and sending forms or whatever. So how did it come about where this was something that you thought was going to be your purpose in life? Was it something that affects you personally, or is it just a story that happened? How did you find this to be where you wanted to align?
It's definitely personal, but then it's also purpose, right? And so my childhood is where it's personal, because I grew up needing that mentor, needing that person, needing those resources to make it to the next day, right? So it's very personal. I was homeless in my childhood. I dealt with a lot of abuse, especially when it came to family. I wasn't the smartest in school, right? Like, there's all these things that when you're a kid, you only have a couple things. You have your family and you have school. And then you have your friends. And that's what saved me, was my friends. So that is a big part of it. Now, when I was about 15, I had a vision, and that vision was my purpose. So it went from being, you know, oh yeah, I used to just want to play basketball, right? Like, I want to be in the WNBA, or I want to be a dance choreographer, or, you know what I'm saying? I just wanted to do stuff. Whatever was fun to me at the time, I wanted to do those things. But when I was 15, I had this vision of a campus. And this is what has drove me for the last 15 years. Is a vision of a campus. It's a self-sustaining campus for foster children and children in need of a positive behavior intervention in any kind of way. And I didn't understand what that vision meant, but I knew that was my job for my life. Like, that was my journey that I got to be a part of. I don't know who sent me the message. I'm thankful. I listened, you know, and so over time, the more I listened, the louder the vision gets. I know a vision is something you're supposed to, but a vision is also all senses, right? It's something you feel. And so the vision continued to get louder the deeper I dove into the roots. And so once I really understood what my purpose was with creating this safe haven for children to be able to thrive, to live, to heal, and just to complete just basically a self-sustaining city only for kids, ran by kids, right? And that this is what I've been working towards this whole time. And so I went to looking at, I need to buy an old hotel, or I need to buy this, or, you know, all these things. And then a lot of knowledge started to come into place where I'm not just going for it. I know that I need to remain a student because I want to grow our own food or medicine. I want to be able to do all of our healing and our therapy. So now it's having me dive and be interns in these other spaces to be able to better understand how to serve all of these kids with all of these needs, right? And so they say it's, you know, a jack of all trades, you know what I'm saying? And then you're basically great at none, right? And so I'm okay with that because then I can attract that greatness to be in those positions as long as we understand it, right? And so that was where this drive came from, is knowing that our children are the target. And I think that the faster we realize that, I don't care what field you're in, our children are the target. They're the money maker for everything. And I think that if we stop looking at it as a scapegoat for to have somebody else raise our children and for us to just be by ourselves and do what we want to do, opposed to creating that village aspect, we have to have a village again for the children. I think that if so many organizations were to collaborate instead of compete, we would already be there. And I also think that if a lot of people weren't exploiting the children, and if the children's exploitation wasn't a benefit on their bank account, we would already be there. But it's not, right? And so I think the foster care system, when you go and do the history, it wasn't created for a good reason. Orphanages weren't created for a good reason, right? So when you go and do the history, you really learn. My background was in sociology, so I was able to see, I have a good sociological imagination, meaning that I understand where I am, the time, the place, and what it means in this space that I'm in, regardless of what room I walk in. But so, yeah, I think that it has both to do with my personal, but even more so what I've learned over time, because I'm a strategist. So if something doesn't fit in a pattern, it's a red flag to me. And so I'm able to kind of see through the bullshit a lot more than other people.
Well, and I always say, whenever you're working where in your purpose of what you're doing, everything gravitates towards you. So like you said, you're able now, you're the jack of all trades, but that's because you're where you're supposed to be. So things are just coming to you like, oh, well, shoot, well, let me figure out how to do this. Oh, well, let me figure out how to do that. Because I'm the same way. I'm like, things just come to me and I'm like, I don't know nothing about this, but let me go look it up, or let me figure out how to be an expert in this also, because obviously this is coming towards me. So I love that. Okay, so let's go into how. Okay, so we talked about the background, and then we talked about you guys, and again I'm going down my little questions here, but because I'll keep sideboring about stuff, so let me focus on the important
things. You can do your side thing too. We can chop it up.
I'm like, wait a minute. Let me ask you one more. And let me ask you this. Okay. So whenever we're talking about integrating trauma-informed principles into your consultations with schools, juvenile detention centers, and behavioral health facilities to support social-emotional learning initiatives, how exactly are you doing that? What is the process for that? Because I know you said you go from institutions to, you know, to just down it at everywhere else. So how exactly is that being processed?
I think first is always a conversation, and having those conversations with the decision makers right out the gate. Sometimes you may not have those resources to get to the decision maker, but finding, it's almost like pinpointing certain, if it was like somebody sitting there, you would be able to see their body language. You would be able, it's the same when you're looking at an institution. Are they promoting this? Are they promoting that on their website? I always do my reviews before going into a place, but then to integrate into it, having a conversation of what it looks like, right? And so if they're already speaking.
So institution is, just for anyone that's not, because when people think institution, they think of a prison only, or some you know, some type of federal lockup or whatever. So institution can vary by what? Like, what
When
exactly
I
is
say
institution?
institutions, I say schools, behavioral health facilities, and prisons. And the reason I call them all institutions, they're all ran by bells. They all telling you when to use the restroom. They're telling you when to eat. They literally are the same system, right? It's just we call it something different, and they may provide a different service. At this point, they're all integrated, right? We got resource officers, and we got social workers in our schools. We also have nurses in our schools, right? And we got the educator. When you go to prison, you have nurses in the prison. You have social workers in the prison, and then you have school in the prison, right? When you go to behavioral health is one of the only hospitals that's probably not bringing you your schoolwork and let, well, that's voluntary, but your parents would bring it. That's who would be bringing you your schoolwork. The hospitals wouldn't necessarily be providing that unless it's a long-term residential stay, which is very realistic for a kids to be in, right? And so they're all providing the same services regardless of what we want to call them. So they're all institution in my head. So sociologically, it's an
Hey, now
institution.
that you broke down, it does
Economics,
it makes
education, state, healthcare, all institutional, all government institutions, right? And so that's that. I mean all of them when I say that. And so, what was the question?
Oh,
No,
sorry.
you
I
good.
got sidetracked because I wanted to break it down, because when you say okay, so how do you integrate trauma-informed principles into your consultations with all of those institutions, schools, juvenile detention centers, behavioral health facilities to support emotional learning initiatives?
And so the trauma-informed care is a language, and it's a way of being. And so you can hear when some people are against trauma-informed. It's just, we're here for the dollar. Let's get this done. It is what it is, which is fine too, right? A business is a business. But then you hear the language. A lot of times it's hitting those pain points, right? When we hear people all the time talk about, in order for sales, you got to hit the pain points. You got to hit the, well, that's trauma-informed sales. Right? All you're doing is finding out where they need help at. You're finding out where it hurts at right now for them. Right? And so it's the same thing. Trauma-informed care is nothing but assuming everybody around you has a traumatic situation and has experienced that. Therefore, you're going to be more mindful when you're doing things. And that's really all it is introducing the first the language, the conversation. And I think at any time, when you're going to really be effective, you have to be okay with changing your language. You have to be okay with adding more verbiage into what you're doing. Something that I really like is the Nurtured Heart Approach by Howard Glasser, and he has the emotionally nutritious words, and I love that because when I come in, I'm able to give you a list of words that are better. So many times you'll see a kid do something amazing, and all they did is a good job. That's a good job. You know why kids act out the most is because it's monkey see, monkey do, and you're your kid's favorite toy, right? And so when your child does something good and they get a good job, that's all they may get, right? When they do something bad, they get a different reaction out of you at every time. That's fun to them. Like, oh, mama finna yell, she finna throw something, she finna, this time I'm gonna do this and see if she about to run through the wall, right? You're your kid's favorite toy, and you have to realize that. And so a lot of times it's because we have to treat both of them the same. It's a balance. We have to treat the negatives and the positives the same. If we're gonna turn up over something bad, we better turn up over something good. You know, and so it's almost like having, and that's what I mean by the verbiage, is we don't have the words to be like, man, you're such a delight. You just showed so much self-control over there. I'm so thankful for you being here. Whoever said that to us in the hood? We don't talk like
Right.
that.
Well, it's like that's the expected behavior, so you're not doing anything
Right.
other than what you're supposed to
Right.
do.
And so it becomes a thing of making them feel empowered more than anything, of that they can create a safe space for these kids to respond. Because that's the goal, is to get a response. They're connecting seeking, but why aren't you connecting it, right? It's because we don't have the resources on the professional end to really connect and understand, because we've been trying to uphold an image to be in a certain position so we can make it, right? And so there's all these things that come into play. And so yeah, that's ultimately how we come in is have that conversation. What does it look like? What are you looking for? Hitting those pain points of what it is and assuming that there is something going on personal in everybody's life, because there is, right? So.
So rewind and tell me, okay, so just so that everyone can understand, because I know we talked about the curriculum developer. Okay, so you have a curriculum and you're going to explain that to me. So the curriculum is this, and then you take this product and then you go to the institution, whether it be from a jail or a juvenile detention center. I don't want to say jail, but whatever it is, schools, whatever, behavioral centers, whatever. You take this curriculum that you have and you go and you find the person and you're like, okay, this is why this can help, or this is how this can help. This is what you can implement. So go back and explain it to us again, what the curriculum is that you developed and how are you going into these institutions and basically showing them this is a product that could be an asset and how it benefits
okay.
you.
So it's different depending on what institution I go into. The curriculum is the same though, period. Because we want to reach the kids that are unreachable, and a lot of them are going to be in these institutions. So this is the curriculum. It's called In the Field with Captain Saberhood. It's a social emotional learning and life skills comic book. And it's telling the real story of our nonprofit. It got to the point where we had to duplicate ourselves to be able to put our program in many different locations. And so we tell stories about class checking and about restorative justice, kids stealing from the corner store, we about to go back and make it right kind of thing. Kids getting adult charged in the institutions. You know, whatever it may be, some kids have, there goes your community service page. Some kids having social anxiety or peer pressure. We hit, basically, if a kid needed a mentor and didn't have a parent, this is what we made it for. Because this is a starter guide to your life to at least have something up under you. And then we added our curriculum into it. And so the curriculum takes care of all emotional regulation, class schedules, how to get off probation. We literally take care of everything in that sense, right? We did the hard part for the professionals. And then when it comes to us connecting with the professionals, we have the reparative field training program. And that's what the professionals are receiving, is that type of training, while the kids are getting handed this. Because now the kid, if any kid see this and they see like, oh, Michi, my cousin ain't Michi, right? You automatically connect with it. When you see this, it's like, oh, that's my, you can relate. And I think that's the big difference of curriculums in today that our kids are being fed, is they can't relate anymore. It's getting to the point where technology is surpassing our literature. And I think that in some way we need to merge it. And that's why we're so big on edutainment, because it is doable. It is okay to merge the two and it to be just as effective and not be considered misprogramming. And so our reparative field training curriculum is for the teachers in order to be able to teach this, right? So this is what you can buy. This is for the kid. This is for the person, right? Then if I brought this out, this is for the institutions, right? And this breaks down each story, each page from the curriculum. And this is each kid's story to show you how to facilitate it. A lot of times that is the inferiority in our educators, is facilitation. They can teach, but they can't facilitate. They can teach and they know the information, but they don't know how to engage and make that kid feel seen. And I think that's what's so important. And then that leads it up to your leadership staff. Because why doesn't your teacher know how to engage and feel that way? Is it because they're feeling that way? You don't make them feel seen? And so that's the conversation at the top, is do your employees feel seen? Because if they don't feel seen, they're definitely not going to go in here and make these kids feel seen. It's a domino effect. And so I think that's why it's so important to have the entire conversation. Because we have the kids, you'll find out everything you need to know about your child through this book. Everything that they'll write, from journals, from goal setting, businesses, list of things to remember, meditation, like literally their diversion plans and things dealing with their trauma are in here. And so we did that hard part for you. Now it's working with the self. And I think that's what's so important with the professional, is it starts with us. If we claim to be in these spaces and want to help, then we need to start with ourselves. And we can't go in these spaces with a certain type of energy or with certain problems or we have to be able to allow those things to flow through like everything else. So that's more so of how we connect the two, is we do two different trainings. We don't necessarily train the child, we train the institution.
I was going to ask you about how you guys approach training the staff and stakeholders within these organizations, because they need to learn the importance of social emotional learning. Yeah. So
what I just showed you with the facilitator guides, those are for hospitals and jails. That's the way they go about it. Now, if I'm doing a school, it's going to be more in a lesson plan or curriculum outline type of form. It's not going to necessarily be all of that, because that's not how they receive it. When it comes to our community members, so we have a responder system, and this is how we connect everybody as far as stakeholders, right? So you have your schools, your behavioral health, inpatient, outpatient, then you have your jails, right? And you have your probation office, then you have your community organizations, family, and the child. So I use mine off of the Bronfenbrenner ecological model. So that's how I build all of my programs, is with many different layers, because it's important to create a social support for that child. And so basically we all get on the same page, and I make everybody sign MOUs. That's the jails, the probation office, that's the inpatients. I mean, not the inpatients, the outpatients. The inpatients, it's a little different with HIPAA. The outpatients, and then with our jail, with not our jails, our schools, right? And then we have community organizations, because we don't want to reinvent the wheel. What we want to be able to do is, if this kid needs this type of service and there's a therapeutic art studio down the street, instead of going and trying to, we need to now bring this therapeutic art studio into this responder system. So now we're going to start bringing all of these kids that need this service, relay the message back to the jail or to the therapist, to whatever it may be, and create like this whole system, because what's happening is our professionals are doing twice the work, but doing the same work. Right. Like, so the kid, they're working with the same kid, but everybody's providing anger management. Everybody's providing, and the kid is really not getting where they need to go, because the same services and half-assed services at that, let's be real, are being provided over and over. So it was kind of to put a wrench in that. Let's take care of that. We don't need all, let's do this. And it's almost allowing the kid to have a trusted adult speak for them. Nobody trusts our kids. So having a trusted adult speak for them, and that gives our community organization back the power of the institutions. The institutions are raising our kids, right? They're getting the money for our kids, though when they come home, we're the ones serving them out of our pocket. You know what I'm saying? And so what it does is it connects the community with the institutions, so that nobody is having to do as much work as they need to. But it's through our responder system, MOUs, and understanding your role and what it is. A lot of times you always have, this isn't my responsibility. Right? But it is. If these are yours, then I love social data. I got to pull the data up for them. If this is what you're looking for, if this is your problem, and we're kind of trying to cut down on recidivism, this is what it's going to look like in order for us to do that, right? Setting up these truancy areas, truancy interventions, setting up these positive behavior interventions in some way, setting up an evening reporting center for these kids to go to. And it affects all three institutions. Anytime one institution makes an improvement, it affects all of them, because they're all connected. And so when a school comes and puts a sensory classroom in their school now, or comes in and puts some sort of outpatient service in their school now that's helping the kid, but also helping the entire behavioral health field in that community, because now the services are going a step further. You know, and so I think that if people looked at it as we're one, I got a saying where I say ecosystems over ego systems, because so many people thrive off of egos. And if we all looked at it as we're a small part to this big machine, and if we just did what we love to do, it would all work out, right? But I think that the ego gets involved, and we don't want other people to outshine us or to do it first or to, you know, so it's more so showing the collaboration over competition aspect, but telling them what their job is. And when you sign this MOU, I'm gonna hold you to it. So if I do need this amount of behavior reports from my kid, if I need this as far as their attendance, if I need, I would like to have that from the school, right? Because we just signed a contract that allows me to go and do my job elsewhere. And so it's just the little things, right? It's just a step further for us to be able to connect. But that's how we combine and train them, is teach them their role. And then when it comes to your trauma informed, we focus on the safety. You have choice. collaboration, trustworthiness, and empowerment. Those are the five pillars of trauma-informed care, right? And so those are what we focus on to hit everything on the head, but then we go into it to their pain points, basically, you know?
Okay, this is such an interesting conversation. It's not, I mean, I know a little bit about a lot, so I love when I do have guests like you that come on, because now I know a little bit more about, but I wanted to ask you this because something that you said made me think about sort of, I guess, this trajectory of a lot of the youth and the adolescents. So I feel that, and I'm a nurse, I've been a nurse for a long time. So I've worked in behavioral health. I've worked in high schools. Every genre that you said of nursing, I've been there too. So I feel that there is always this sort of struggle for a youth, right? Because it could be from middle to high school. So it's like, once they make a decision to do something that isn't the right way, it doesn't align what they're supposed to do, they get in trouble. Maybe, like you said, now no one trusts what they're saying. They have a bad reputation. So I think that a lot of the youth, what happens is that happens, and then they're like, well, screw it. They don't trust me anyway, or I might as well keep doing this because no one sees me other than this. And they won't say that. They want people to not see them that way because, like you said, it's mm-hmm. ego.
Yeah, even absolutely. From youth. Absolutely. There's
So how do you guys, because you see it obviously very often where, okay, let's go in here and have this intervention to stop you because you're going on this path, you know, but I know that you have those young individuals that feel I'm tough. This is where I'm going. I don't care about going to jail, whatever. It ain't that big of a deal. So how do you guys reach those individuals and you're like, hey, I know it's okay to be, mm-hmm. you want to be tough, but yeah, tough ain't it. Sure. Like, give us a realistic example of how that happened. I can see it happening all the time.
So, and that's my bread. I love, they're my babies. I love it. I want to work with kids nobody else wants to work with. I want the kids that everybody done rolled out. I don't care if they done killed somebody. I don't care what this child has done, right? Because to me, it's an opportunity, right? To be able to figure out, and it's not even something, it's to lay the bricks down for them to walk down this journey and path, right? Because we all have a journey and path. So when it comes to those kids, initially, you may get some pushback. Now, when I first stepped in the game, like I said, they ran from me. Like, you got a clipboard. You green as hell, right? You hear me? You green as hell. We about to run all over you, right? They automatically get like this mic, but I'm from around the way too. I may change the way I talk. I may change the way I dress because I have a role to play as well in that area. And so I think that being that kid or being that loving, already loving the environment, I think that's a big thing too, is that we have so many saviors that try to come into our community, and you don't really love what we do and what we go through, and you gotta love it because we here, we ain't got no choice, right? And so it's almost like already knowing what it's like being that kid of how we about to eat, what's about that, mama just got her ass whooped, when we finna do, right? Like it gets to a point where you become a kid and you become a problem solver very early. And that's who that kid is. Whoever's angry, whatever, they ain't mad at me. They don't even know me. They mad at their mama and them. So for me to take it personal is the ego, right? For me to take anything personal that this person that does is an ego, right? We have to create these safe spaces for them to know it's safe. They mess up and people stop fucking with them. Now I don't want to work with you. I don't want to. What is that telling that kid? That they not worth anything more than I don't do that. If that kid goes to jail, I got at least 50 kids that can vouch. When you get locked up, when you go and do something wrong, I'm still there. Those are my testimony, is the kid. Because that I'm I'm coming to visitations. I'm coming to your court date. When you get out, we about to take care of all your community service, right? And so I'm there. Your mama and them ain't showing up. I just talked to her though. She cool, right? Like, cause you keep embarrassing her in front of these white folks. That's what they gonna always say, right? You know, so it's being able to be that gray area to the community of I can go in here and testify and talk about the lack of development of your prefrontal cortex, and that's why you shouldn't be adult charged because of the social determinants of health. You know what I'm saying? Like I can completely go in whatever we want to go down that path with them, but then when it comes to our kids, you got to be real with them. Allow them to tell you the truth. So you can't get mad when they tell you the truth. I don't care what they done did. You can't get mad. If I gave you the go to tell me the truth and be honest, I have to go about that accordingly. And so I think that was the biggest thing that I can immediately now, it's easy for me to get those kids. All I got to say is what's good with you. And we about to start chopping it up, right? Because I'm not coming at you as an authority figure. I'm coming at you as a big homie. And I think that sometimes our clothes make them think that we ain't the big homie no more. I think that sometimes our verbiage make them think that we ain't the big homie no more. And so when you able to connect the two different dialogues or dialects in a sense to where you don't have to, it's a time and place for everything. And I'm not saying code switch because we want to create spaces that we don't have to code switch in. And I think that that's what I've done more is start to create those spaces of when I come in here, I may have used that voice to get this interview or to get this job, but when I come in here, you're going to know who I am. I'm not going to change the way I talk because you're going to have to see me every day, right? But me being able to stand and be trustworthy but still speak like this is going to allow my kids to come behind me and be able to speak like this and be accepted, right? And so there's certain things that we have to be able to take a lot of hits as the organization. You have to be able to be the counterintelligence. You have to be able to be the disruptor. You have to be able to be labeled as all of these negative things to institutions in order to get the point across sometimes. And then after a while, it'll kind of be like, we need you, right? But up front, it's like, no, you're just as big of a problem as the kids are if you want to work with them, right? I was literally told, because I was down in the Bible Belt. I was down in Fayetteville, Arkansas, where it's many Fortune 500, Walmart, Tyson Chicken, J.B. Hunt, like it's a very, Stacy say, very resource rich area, right? All this money in that area. And that wasn't the case for our kids, right? That wasn't the case for the hood. And who are y'all helping with all these, who's in there? Right. If everybody has resources, who are y'all helping with all this money you're donating if it's not these kids? And so it was different. I was literally told like, oh, you're a disruptor. We consider you counterintelligence. And I didn't even know what that meant at the time. Right. So I had to go look it up. And the only time I heard it, though, was they were using it in the terms of the Black Panthers. The government was saying they were counterintelligent. All it means is that you're going against their agenda. Right. And so she told me, she was like, I love your gardening programs. I love this, that, but we invest in pharmaceuticals and private prisons. Us investing in your gardens, that your garden goes against a pharmaceutical any day, right? Because it's what your food is, your medicine, if we want to get down to it, right? And so it was just a clear, like, we love what you do, but we can't give you anything for this. But keep, you know, good job, right? And so it was a thing where it was like, oh, I ain't fooling with y'all. Y'all got some money behind. Oh, no, we'll be just as strategic, right? And so the kids are the easy part. The kids just want somebody to love them, somebody that's going to show up twice, somebody that's not going to sit here and judge them because they've been going through this type of trauma for so long, right? And it's even creating that amongst the kids. And I think it's just it's listening when nobody's speaking. That's how you get to those kids. And just understand, man, just because they're not on your time doesn't mean they're not on time. And I say that all the time. It's like their time is not your own. It's theirs, right? So whatever journey they have to go through to help somebody, whenever you go through something, it's not for you. You're the messenger. That means that you're going to have to give that message to somebody else later on down in life, and this is preparing you for it. And so that's a lot of times when kids are going through that and people start to devalue them, I put him on a pedestal because I'm like, ooh, you about to have one hell of a journey, dog. Like, this about to, I know you sad right now, but this about to be some, you can't kill the dead. Once you get that kid broken all the way down to the point they don't want to live no more, that's what our society does. Breaks them down to that point, and now they decided to live. Oh, you can't kill that spirit no more, right? And so I think that it's a very empowering, a very resilient time for our kids to be able to be this, because we got kids making more money than people that's been working for 50 years, right? This digital ages. You better respect our kids because they coming up, mm-hmm. right? So
I know, right? Shoot, hey, I you wanted to put me on. Screaming. I'm like, hey. If I get one more young person tell me to go on Bego, I'm a Bego or something.
I'll find
I'm
you like, some of my kids that do it. If you want a little guidance, I got some kids that be streaming and do they thing.
End of the year. I can't take any more projects right now. Okay, so for anyone that wants to get in touch with you guys, anyone that wants to subscribe, to help, to volunteer, drop all the information. How can we help you guys? How can we support you guys? And then also, how can people that want to get the curriculum into their institution, how can they?
So everything you find at CaptainSableHood.com, as far as any bookings, any bulk curriculum orders. You can always just directly email the info@CaptainSableHood.com with whatever your request may be. Our bulk orders are different than our online orders, just a single order. Our curriculum is also on Amazon. So you want to go get it on Amazon. That's the cheapest place to get it right now, as well as the bulk orders. But CaptainSableHood.com. And another way you can get to us is do the work in your community. So whatever kid or any institution that you may be a part of, go help out. Go do whatever you can. Just give your services in some way. And like Holly said, you can literally do it through social media. That's a big thing for us, is to have other people talking about the great work we're doing, because we really don't have time to talk about it. We're doing the work. It's so hard for us to get on, sit in somebody's face while they crying and then go post it. We can't do that, right? And so it's easier for us to have people that are storytellers, right? And all of us ain't storytellers. So have somebody to be able to go tell this story, to be able to post this and shed light on the work we're doing, that allows us to be more pure. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, CaptainSableHood.com.
All right. I love that. And that's your
Captain
Instagram
Sablehood,
too,
Captain
right?
_ Sablehood.
Okay, and I will also have all of the information for the website. Everything will be in the podcast notes. I'll have Micah's information, contact, all of that in the podcast notes too. So you guys can scroll to the podcast notes and make sure, like we said, make sure you are also being a change in your own community. It's so easy to just go and start giving back and volunteering and just being the change that we need as well. And this is just another opportunity that we're showing you guys. But if you look in your own city, on your own town, your own, wherever you live, they have something. And if they don't have something, let this be a invitation for you to start something. So I love that. So that is Micah Dennis, you guys. Thank you.